This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. You're going to love this show. You're just going to love this show. Freedom sounds nice, right? Well, what if we look at it deeper? Diversity. Well, that's worth doing. But a deeper look? Truth. Press freedom. All this hour, a deeper look into some concepts we value and think we understand, but sometimes crumble in the chilly winds of reality. Remember the internet? The internet? That old thing? Access to a universe of information and fellow users on a free, virtually untraceable computer node that you traversed with a few tools, a search engine, a text editor, and a simple browser for finding news groups, Usenets all over the world. You could set up voice connections and even video connections with a little bit of work on your own. Today, you think you go on the internet, but you actually go on Google, or you go on Firefox, or Safari, or Facebook, or Chrome, or Yahoo, or Bing, or Baidu, enabled by services like AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint, or some other corporate-owned cloud server. These corporate platforms are now what passes for the internet, and from them, corporations or anyone else can monitor, restrict, or share data with governments or Edward Snowden. President Obama has another name for this. He calls it net neutrality.
Ever since the internet was created, it's been organized around basic principles of openness, fairness, and freedom. There are no gatekeepers deciding which sites you get to access. There are no toll roads on the information superhighway. This set of principles, the idea of net neutrality, has unleashed the power of the internet and given innovators the chance to thrive.
Wow, that sounds great. Net neutrality does sound nice. Colorful language from President Obama last year when he was advocating for the FCC to protect net neutrality. But according to the latest edition of Freedom House's annual Internet Freedom Report released this week, digital civil liberties have been curtailed for the fifth year in a row around the world, and there are now more countries with heavily censored internet than there are ones with a completely free internet. Last among the 65 countries assessed is China. Is the U.S. with its net neutrality badge first? Susan Crawford, professor at Harvard Law School and a director of the Berkman Center for Internet Society. Susan, I'll put the question to you. Is the U.S. first on the list?
Well, first of all, John, great to be here. Terrific idea for a program. And no, the U.S. is not quite first on the list, but we're very high up, and we are among the countries that is treated as free by Freedom House. And the important thing the report is telling us is that for many countries in the world, 32 of them they're pointing to, freedom has been constrained over the last year when it comes to the globally interoperable internet that you just talked about, where anybody can speak, just plug in a device. That's a troubled future around the world.
So is my cynicism misplaced, or is that where we're headed?
Well, the future contours of the internet are definitely up for grabs, and there's a choice we're facing. Well, whether we're going to have this network that provides humans with choices and opportunities and self-determination, or whether China's and Russia's vision will be the prevailing one. The thing those two countries are more afraid of than anything else is an open internet. It's the thing they fight every day. And that vision is increasingly being adopted by countries that want to control their citizens. The U.S. has to have its opposing vision out on the world stage.
Does the open internet depend on everyone being open? For instance, is there a kind of critical mass where if most countries have a closed internet, it really doesn't matter who has the open internet anymore?
Well, I'm one of the people who really wants to see this globally interoperable network, not a series of intranets like a Russian internet and a China internet to which we can't communicate and they can't get out to us. It's about self-determination, freedom, the opportunity to thrive. That's a vision I want for everybody around the world. And it is important that we make sure to put pressure on those countries to keep that open.
Can we trust the platforms that we use, the Googles, the Facebooks, the Bings and Twitters that actually filter us from the internet? They keep us from the actual raw internet. And do we need to put our faith in them in addition to our faith in governments, or are they somehow collaborators with governments?
Well, in many countries around the world, what's going on is that governments are using the equivalent of a Staples Easy button. They sort of push on online platforms to constrain content that the government can't constrain itself. And this is leading to a lot of censorship around the world. We do have to trust companies and tell them to make sure to keep their platforms open as much as possible. There are a lot of good actors in this space. Companies are trying to tell us about the numbers of times they receive requests from government to constrain content. Google, Twitter, and Facebook are all doing that. LinkedIn, by contrast, has been actively constraining what it's up to in China so that they're making sure that people in China are not getting access to things that China doesn't want them to see.
So is there a government that can monitor who's good at their interactions with other governments, like, for instance, LinkedIn? Is that what the Berkman Center does?
Well, the Berkman Center has a lot of projects looking at the future of the open Internet around the world. I think that what's most important here is this snapshot that Freedom House is giving us of a moment in time when we could sort of tilt towards the Chinese version of the Internet or have an opposing vision that keeps the Internet open. Very interesting countries hang in the balance, like India, where 1.2 billion people could be online. Only about a quarter of them are right now. And they're viewed as partly free by Freedom House. Or Cuba, which is just coming online. Much of Africa. Who are they going to follow? And our hope, my hope, is that they look to the United States, Australia, Canada, the EU, as a model of openness, not just for economic purposes, but for the thriving of human beings.
Susan Crawford, professor at Harvard Law School and a director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Thanks so much, Susan.
Thanks so much, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.